the House Police Entities.
Would the House come back to order?
Would the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
House Bill 267 by the Resources Committee, an act relating to the levy and collection of fees for the use of state park facilities and providing for an effective date. The Committee on Resources has had the bill under consideration, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 267 Resources with the same title, recommends it do pass and attaches a fiscal note. Report was signed by Schultz co-chair, concurred in by Herman, Schultz, Cato, Pierce, M.W. Miller, and Thompson, having no recommendations, Sund and Jenkins. The Committee on Finances had the bill under consideration, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 267 Resources, and that it do pass and attaches a new fiscal note. Report was signed by Adams chairman, signing do pass, Adams, Rieger, Larson, Szymanski, Frank, Porchot, Binkley, Duncan, and Cotton. Ewing has no recommendation. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Clark.
Mr. Speaker, it's my intention to adopt the committee substitute and then move for a recess with the two amendments that are on the table pending. If we're lucky and can get back here after the governor's speech, we can then complete the calendar. Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the Resources Committee substitute for House Bill 267 be considered in lieu of the original bill.
Are there any objections to the committee substitute being adopted? Hearing no objections, the committee substitute has been adopted. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the House stand in recess until 12:05.
All right. We'll be back at 12:05. 2:05. Would the members of the House and Senate please come to order? In accordance to Rule 51 of the Uniforms Rules, which should be amended, the presiding officer at a joint session is the President of the Senate. This time I hand the gavel over to the President.
Will the joint session please come to order? The purpose of this joint session is the budget message by the Honorable Bill Sheffield, Governor of the State of Alaska. Senator Halford.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent the Senate roll call be waived and all members of the Senate be shown as present.
Without objection, so ordered. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call of the House be waived and that all members of the House be shown as present.
Without objection, so ordered. Will Representative Porchot and Senator Face escort the Honorable Bill Sheffield, Governor of the State of Alaska, to the joint session?
President Bennett, Speaker Grusendorf, members of the House and Senate, and fellow Alaskans. Last Friday, the State Department of Revenue issued its quarterly forecast on state revenue. The news wasn't good, and that's why I'm here to talk with you today, to talk about the state budget for the fiscal year 1986. But first, let me say the House and Senate have done a commendable job during the first 79 days of the session. You've done something no legislature has done in more than a decade. Instead of adding more money to the governor's proposed budget, you've had to take some out. I know that hasn't been easy. I know, because it wasn't very easy holding the state operating budget down to a mere 6% increase last December. After all, we're the fastest growing state in the country, and new people are arriving every day, each with plans for the present, hopes for the future, and many needs for public services. That reality is one we must balance with the reality of world oil prices. Since oil provides us with almost all of our revenue, we have to cope not only with the needs inside our state, but also with the economic forces outside our borders that drive down the price of oil. And make no mistake about it, Alaskans everywhere know what we're up against. In my visits with Alaskans the past few weeks, it's clear they see the world in very real terms. For example, at the University of Alaska, I met with students working hard for an education. On the crisis line, I saw dedicated people working hard to help Alaskans who need the help the most. At a demonstration for local hire in Fairbanks, I met with construction workers looking for jobs. At a statewide conference in Anchorage, I met with scores of dynamic women seeking economic equality. And in an emotional convention last week, I spoke to hundreds of Alaska Natives striving to preserve a way of life. In each case, from the crisis line to the workers' rally, from the classroom to the convention hall, I saw Alaska looking for answers. The answers they seek depend very much on the decisions we must make and make together over the next 40 days and 40 nights. The people set the deadline for the end of this session, 120 days. Today is day 80, and there's still much to do. The fate of the longevity bonus, a commitment to save more money in the permanent fund, a recreational river system in South Central Alaska, a package of child protection bills, local hire, a measure that will restore the balance to our subsistence priority law. Action on all those issues and a few others must be taken sometime in the next 40 days if the public is to be served. Since you convened in January, I've reminded you of my priority legislation for this state, but today we should focus squarely on the state budget. You've already done a considerable amount of work on the budget I proposed last December, and you've reached some tentative conclusions. With well over a month remaining in the session, there's plenty of time for us to finish the job. And with the revenue forecast we have in hand now, that job is clear. Over the next 40 days and 40 nights, we must balance our flood tide of needs with an ebb tide of dollars. That's not a disaster, it's a challenge. Right now, we have the opportunity to make Alaskans proud of the way government responds to a challenge. That pride and confidence has been shaken in recent weeks. We've all been shocked and saddened by the revelations of fiscal mismanagement and possible violations of law in one of our youngest local governments. As that unfortunate and deplorable situation winds its way through the audits, grand juries, and possibly the courts, I hope all of us, from those who were elected to those who elected us, can remember and appreciate the progress we've made in the last 25 years as a state. Our oil wealth has not been squandered. It's here working for the public good. And as we pass judgment on those who may have violated the public trust, let's work even harder to make sure that trust is restored and that justice is done. Already this year, you, the members of the House and Senate, have approached your work with an urgency and responsibility that should make Alaskans proud. You've taken a relatively lean budget and made it leaner. I have joined you in this effort by tightening up our current budget. The combination of our efforts is a $300 million cut. Now, the Department of Revenue predicts we'll have even leaner times ahead, with about $460 million less than we thought we'd have just 4 months ago. That's not a crisis, but it is a crunch. So during this crunch, we'll have to change some plans and expectations. The proposed Anchorage State Office Complex is a good place to start. That $91 million project is much needed, and the creative financing plan we've designed for it would certainly save the state money in the long run. However, considering the recent revenue projections, I will not proceed with this project unless legislature gives the go-ahead and the community of Anchorage gives us its support. In the future, it's clear that we'll need some creative financing on a number of large projects, and the House and Senate must play a role in approving these new financing mechanisms. But even if we reach agreement on the Anchorage Complex project, we're still faced with the task of revising the budget now before us. Therefore, I'm proposing adjustments in the major segments of our spending plan: operating expenses, loan programs, and capital construction. I'll start with the operating budget, since it's the biggest segment of the spending plan. The legislature has worked hard to trim $130 million from the operating budget, and that's plenty for this year. In our zeal to cut back our spending, we can't ignore several factors, things I pointed out when I addressed this body in January. The fact is, even as our revenue forecasts go down, our population is growing up. 30,000 people came to Alaska last year. Alaska's needs, whether it's education or health care, public safety or state aid to local governments, are met primarily by the state. Well over a third of the operating budget, this year that's about $800 million, goes straight from the state to the people. $150 million in municipal assistance and revenue sharing, $100 million in school debt retirement, $500 million in operating aid to school districts. I could go on and on through the whole list. In addition, the operating budget is people providing service to people. A health aide in Kotzebue, a state trooper in Tok, a teacher in Anchorage, a ferry worker in Ketchikan. We can't just wipe away those needs and all those people with a couple of flicks of an eraser on a ledger sheet. And here's another fact. As our revenues continue to decline, which it appears they will, we're going to have to cut the operating budget again next year. In the future, state government will gradually be pared back to core services, and local governments will have to assume more responsibility for meeting local needs. Some of that may start this year, and even more will come next year. You can count on that. But let's not do all that at once. And while I praise the House and Senate for their work in making the first round of revisions, some of the preliminary cuts have been off target. For example, the legislature unreasonably cut back one of the state's smallest but most important agencies, the Department of Environmental Conservation. This department has the third smallest budget of all, but its job is enormous, and that is making sure the air and the land and the water of America's most beautiful state remain clean. In addition, we should restore the full increase I proposed for the state's daycare assistance program. A budget shortfall can't hide the growing number of working women in our society, women who are often the sole providers for their families. I'm talking about women near the poverty line, women who need that daycare to find a job or stay on the job. I assure you that we'll identify new cuts to make up for those priorities I've just mentioned. That's because overall, we all know we have to keep the budget down. The same goes for other segments of our budget, loan programs and capital construction. I endorse the ceiling of $100 million you set for state lending programs. And furthermore, I believe we can raise half that amount with reappropriations instead of new money from the general fund. In the capital budget, I propose that we limit general fund appropriations to $415 million. That includes $250 million for the Power Development Fund and $165 million for other projects, from roads to schools to water and sewer projects and other priorities. We'll have to go back into the capital budget to identify those other projects, but that will be done by late next week. In the meantime, we should plan on sticking to the numbers I just mentioned. With federal funds matching that state money, we should be able to put $500 million to work across the state next year. In addition, we can save $250 million for meeting the future needs of our residents, especially energy needs of our residents, especially in the rail belt area. And now, while I'm on the subject of saving money, I should add that any statement I make today about last Friday's revenue forecast would be incomplete without underscoring this point. And that is, as the price of oil continues to drop, taking our state revenues with it, we need the permanent fund more than ever. I know falling state revenue makes it difficult to plan a budget. But then again, it wasn't so easy in the days when the price of oil was going from $20 a barrel to $30. To aid in that planning effort, we have a tool at our disposal. And created by a constitutional amendment 9 years ago, the permanent fund can provide us with a stable source of revenue, replacing our dependence on an unstable commodity like crude oil. Now, while we can afford it, we can turn that volatile commodity into stability by authorizing additional payments to the permanent fund. We may not be able to save all that money as fast as we'd like, but without a vote of the House and Senate, we won't be able to save any additional income, whether it's produced by careful budgeting, smart spending, or future windfalls. I'm referring, of course, to the TAP settlement, the 8G negotiations, or the offshore boundary dispute with federal government, windfalls like that. For that reason, I urge you once again to bring to the floor and vote on House Bill 71, giving the state the authority to save another $500 million in the permanent fund when we can. The permanent fund, I realize, is just as dear to you as it is to me. It's our permanent foundation. Beyond dividend payments, however, we're unsure what its future will really be. And for example, just 2 days ago, I received a long and detailed proposal from a member of the Alaska Senate. It reads in part, "Dear Governor, I would like for you to consider the possibility of placing a ballot question before the state's voters containing $300 million worth of priority capital projects. The voters would be asked whether they wanted to fund the capital projects from the undistributed income account of the Alaska Permanent Fund. If they vote yes, then the projects are funded. If they vote no, then the $300 million would be deposited into the principal of the Alaska Permanent Fund." I mention this idea from a state senator only as an illustration of the demands a growing population places on the public purse. As I said, I oppose spending our savings account. But if the legislature finds merit in this area, in this idea, it would certainly be interesting to see what the voters would say about it. Of course, this proposal may never have materialized if we weren't faced with a sudden shortfall in our revenues. And that's not the only proposal that's been brought up recently. In this House, just an hour ago, I understand a bill was introduced that would have the effect of raising state income taxes on the oil and gas industry. I intend to read this bill very, very carefully. In years past, as the state's tax policies were evolving, or when revenues were short, the legislature has not hesitated in going back to the well for more oil and gas revenue. Given our current set of circumstances, I believe that kind of action this year would be premature. But let me say this. As long as one of our major industries, along with the construction companies it hires, as long as they import labor to our state, they shall not export our natural resources without paying a fair price.
We are entitled in this state to a resident workforce. A resident workforce means stability in our neighborhoods, paychecks in the bank, and food on the table for Alaskans. And none of us here today can forget, it's Alaskans who hired us. Yes, I've set an ambitious course for this government over the next 40 days and 40 nights, and I'll admit it seems like a mountain of work. However, we can get it done. We can balance the budget while protecting our most important needs. We can make a commitment to the permanent fund. We can take action on issues like subsistence, the longevity bonus, local hire, and other priorities. We can do all those things in 40 days because we can't forget our commitment to Alaskans. Thank you.
Said he'll be happy to answer a few questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. Governor, there's two major things I have. One is a kind of a little plum that's in the budget today, and the other is probably a long-range consideration that I think we all must face. And recently, in the last 3 days, POMs are coming down from even students and university people. The little plum first had to do with Section 15 of House Bill 60, which came from the governor's office. It allocates $2,150,000 for political contributions. I feel, sir, it's about time that we decrease the amount of money going into that little pot. And would you be willing, how would you feel about us deleting that from the budget? And secondly, sir, I think we got to address, not this year, but perhaps next year, the permanent fund dividend checks. Thank you.
Terry, I think I mentioned to you the other day, it seemed like other folks used that political contribution funds more last year than some of us did, but as I read in the newspaper. But anyway, I think that can be discussed. It's been a program. It was started as a program to attempt to get more people interested in their politicians and interested in their government, to come out and be active, and I think it was a good program as was designed for. If now we're in a budget shortfall and we're looking for more revenues, it may not be as good a program as it was in the past.
Representative Adams.
Thank you, Mr. President. Governor, as you said in your particular speech, that the House has introduced a bill regarding oil taxes. We have only done this because of the fact that in House Finance that we heard testimony the other day, perhaps that when we passed a piece of legislation in regards to this in 1981, that the state's calculations were off. We believe that we should look at it, and based on the various assumptions at that particular time, the legislature was believed that the apportionment form of taxation would increase the revenues and that the change would bring about the settlement of the ARCO and the state. But neither of these two things have happened. We also believe that this would maximize our taxation revenue. And we also believe that there's a fairest way to determine exactly how much income oil companies earn on their production of taxation and exploration activities in Alaska so that the appropriate rate of taxation can be made. We also would like to go along with the state policy that as an exploration incentive, companies do not pay any tax until they start producing. We believe also that both bodies would like to work on, perhaps with our energies, to work together to promote the future development and enhance the long-term benefits of the development of Alaska for its people. We are here to work for Alaska, for Alaskans. But at the same time, if we find that perhaps the piece of legislation that we passed in 1981 now has developed warts and pimples, that now if we find out that the calculations are not correct and we pass a piece of legislation as this, would you veto that piece of legislation?
Al, I just had a chance to review the legislation for a moment this morning as it was introduced. It appears to me that you have found some of those problems passed in 81 or by laws that was amended in 81. It appears to me that you have lowered the severance tax and you've added some additional revenues. We don't know how much that revenue might be. I think your bill said maybe $1.1 billion based on 83 projections. I think on 85 projections that might need to be re-looked at. But let me just say this. I'm not going to say whether I'd veto or well, I would approve that package at the moment. I would look at that bill very, very carefully, as I said in my prepared remarks, and listen to the debate and see where our revenue projections are done and make up my mind at that time. But I would look at it very, very carefully.
Describing this bill as a tax increase rather than a revenue enhancement, that's just in the case of plain English, that is in fact what it is. I'm interested by the implicit linkage that you're making between a possible tax increase on the oil industry and the question of Alaska Hire. I'm not necessarily opposed to that linkage, but I care just as much as you do about getting Alaskans to work on the slope and other oil areas. But I would suggest that the Department of Labor do a study and tell us exactly what really is going on in Alaska Hire, particularly on the slope. Now, I've read a lot of things in the papers, I've heard a lot of stories, but how many of those people are really being brought up from the lower 48 to work up there? And if it's as bad as you read about in the papers, then we better do something about it. But I'd like some facts to base those kinds of decisions on. Thank you.
Thank you, Fritz. We are in the process of attempting to furnish those facts. We've been on the slope. We've audited 10 or 12 companies, found some to be in total compliance at the outset, some 10% off, some 15% off, some 47.5% off, some 36% off of compliance in our opinion. We go back then and run those figures and check against various checks and balances to find out if we're really right or wrong. But we did announce that in the paper the other day. We think that we're correct, that there's at least six companies far enough out of compliance that we went back and talked to those people. We have audited some large companies in Anchorage, maintenance and operations divisions of companies, and found them to be 98% local hire. We're going back and checking now to see if we're really right in our initial thinking, if they are 98% in compliance. We are also going to be doing audits on more construction companies on the North Slope to find out where we are. And all of this has been building up. But when you go to Fairbanks and you see people carrying picket signs just saying, "Hey, Governor, I haven't got a job. And I've been here for years and years and years. Haven't worked in 4 months, 6 months, 7 months." Fairbanks is a good spot to go and see it because it's a smaller community. You can kind of see it and feel it better than you can in Anchorage, although it's all over the state. Those are sincere people, not boisterous, not boycotting, not running here and there, not causing a lot of problems, just want a job. And so we're entitled to have a resident workforce in this state. And I'm going to make it one of my high priorities to see if I can't get those Alaskans to work in this state once and for all. And I think that we can encourage our industries, and it's not just oil and gas companies, but it's other industries across the state, to employ Alaskans first, because that's who put us here.
Representative Thompson, that's right.
Thank you, Mr. President. Governor, given the prospects for that ebb tide of revenues that you mentioned, I'd like to know if you will support legislation that would generate new revenues outside of the realm of taxation, such as HB 338, which would establish the state lottery.
I've been asked that before, Dave, and I, frankly, I suppose it'll be debated fairly well in the House and Senate before it gets to my desk, if it does. I see a lot of states having lotteries and fairly successful. I see some states not generating enough money to pay for the lottery. I guess it's kind of complicated, and I wouldn't want to see it get in the midst of a big bureaucracy where we have to double the size of government to run a lottery. But it does have some merit in the thinking of it, and I'd like to see the pros and the cons on it and really debate it well before I made up my mind. But, it's done across the United States, a lot of states, and it may be something that that is worthy of a good debate.
Senator Rick.
Thank you, Mr. President. Governor, I was listening, and perhaps I missed something. I was listening to Representative Adams and his remarks, and I remembered now, in retrospect, and I believe that I was the chairman of the Free Conference Committee on the Senate side when we made those amendments to the bill. It was a different administration, and it was a different governor. It was a different political persuasion. But as I remember it, I believe that the president was on there with me on the Free Conference. I was the chairman on the Senate side. And thinking back on it, we followed directly the information that was handed down to us from the Department of Law. We listened exactly to what they said. We listened to the consequences that they feared. And now all of a sudden, I don't know who's bringing this up, but somewhere along the line, as the good representative said, there's some warts that's grown, or it's something has certainly been disfigured. But I would be very cautious in examining this, and I guess you could lead a horse to water once, but I'm not so sure you could make him drink the second time.
Well, Senator Ray, I've heard some of those same cautions raised this morning and yesterday and the day before, and that's the reason why I said we'd want to look at it very, very, very carefully to see if that's right and proper.
Representative Furness.
Thank you, Mr. President. Question to the governor. Governor, you're probably aware that over the last several days, members of the House and Senate, principally those members from South Central Alaska, have held hearings concerning the administration's proposal to increase the cost of natural gas. You're well aware that that potential increase could raise the utility cost to the residents within South Central, some 100,000 people, by an approximate amount up to 20%. I notice an absence in your presentation today concerning that issue. I appreciate perhaps your position as to that increase and what the administration can possibly do to decrease the effect upon these residents.
Thank you. Well, let me just say that I didn't overlook it. It was buried in my $450 million worth of capital project money, because that would generate $8 million to the state of Alaska if that increase happens. It's not that I want to raise 100,000 people's light bill in Anchorage by any amount of money, whether it be 10% or 15% or 20%, and we're not quite sure what that raise might be. We pass along the fair market value of our gas to those utilities, and they either absorb that cost or pass it on to the consumer by way of their hearings that they'll have with the Alaska Public Utilities Commissions before that rate increase might go into effect, if it does. We're required by law, we're required morally to get the fair market price out of our resources. That's what all these lawsuits are about with the industry, with the federal government. That's what we have done and been told by the legislature year after year after year, thinking back last year with the Zorro contracts and others. We'd be remiss if we did not charge fair market value for our resources. Now then, if the legislature, in all their wisdom, wants to subsidize Anchorage power rates, they could pass a law to refund that $8 million back. But and I think Esther Warnke testified very good on Monday that it's not us, it's not the governor, hates all those people. I don't want to raise those light bills either, any more than any one of you who live in Anchorage. But it's our responsibility to charge a fair market price for that gas. The problem is that we've been in Anchorage getting real low gas prices for a long time. And I've been saying for a long time, are we going to raise those, you know, when sometime when those gas contracts run out, those existing contracts, when the price really goes up, are we going to, what are we going to do then with those people? Their light bill could double, triple. But this is about a 10 to 20% increase if the utility companies choose to pass it on. It's fair market price for our resource, and we as a government don't have any way to do anything other than that, this administration. But the legislature can, if they want to, could pass a law to subsidize Anchorage power rates, which are the lowest, by the way, in the nation, and still will be the lowest in the nation when that rate goes into effect, if it does.
I have one final question.
Thank you, Mr. President. Governor, on the one hand, I'd like to compliment you on what you said today concerning local hire. And to let you know that in the past several weeks, I've been working with people in your Department of Labor who have been excellent assistants toward legislative programs. Now watch my other hand. On the other hand, Governor, I've been really dismayed that the state, and it's not only an executive branch problem, the state does not have any kind of a prioritized capital and operating spending plan. We ought to know in advance what projects are going to be funded before the bill goes to free conference committee, for example. We would like to see from the executive branch an initiative that makes an attempt to present all the capital spending projects in the state in a prioritized fashion so that we know if only $100 million spending, we know which projects are going to fall below that line and will not be funded, rather than leaving it to the political caprice of the moment.
Marco, let me just cover that capital budget just for a second. You know, we have a priority. We've one thing we've accomplished in 2 years on the capital budget, besides trying to reduce it, is the fact that we've got a priority system set out there and a criteria set up for capital projects across this whole state, from village to town. We've got a priority system. It goes through a public process in each one of those communities, and they, through you and other legislators in this room, and the OMB and the governor's office, submit those plans from all those communities. There is a priority list for almost every community in this state. And it goes right down the line, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. We take our money and geographically spread it out across the state and come down that line as far as we can. And that's how we made up the capital budget, and it was presented to you folks back last December 14th. Now then, what we're going to do in the next 4 or 5 days is reevaluate that capital budget and bring it down to the $165 million and present it to you again with our priorities as we see it in the state. And then you, of course, have the prerogative. You're the one who appropriates to tear that up any way you wish, except that we have some real needs across the state that we think are necessary. Roads is one, water and sewer is another. And we need to get our federal funds from the federal government, so that requires a certain amount of dollars, too. But, so, you know, we can give you a list, and there is a list, a total list.
Is Red Dog still on the list?
What?
Is Red Dog still on the list?
That's in a loan program. It's not in the capital budget. That's right. And there may be some revisions of how that can be handled for more or less. But anyway, that's coming up, too. But the whole list could be presented to you. OMB has it. About $5 billion worth of capital projects across the state in priority fashion.
Thank you, very much, sir.
Thank you all very much. I appreciate it.
Senator Halper.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent to joint session stand in adjournment.
No objection. Joint session is adjourned.
To today's calendar. Would the House please come back to order? At this time, I'd like to place a call on the House on the bill that we have before us. That is Committee Substitute for House Bill 267, Resources. Representative Clark.
May we have a brief at ease?
House, please stand at ease. Resources. Does the clerk have any amendments upon her desk?
Yes, Mr. Speaker. Amendment number 1 by Maru, page 1, line 12. Between fees and for, insert, comma, or negotiate management contracts, comma.
Representative Maru.
Mr. Speaker, I move this brilliant amendment and ask my brilliant colleagues to give it unanimous approval.
Hearing objections, Representative Maru.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Pardon me. This amendment would simply allow the Department of Natural Resources to negotiate management contracts for the collection of fees or and or other services in the state park-developed campsites. It says here that we're allowing them to establish and collect fees, and I would strongly recommend that we allow them another alternative, and that is to contract out this service.
Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I oppose the amendment. It's an interesting concept, but I don't think the proposed amendment accomplishes the purpose. If you read that section with the amendment, it says the department may establish and collect fees or negotiate management contracts for the overnight use of state park developed campsites. I don't think you want management contracts for the use of the campsites, and the fact that the word fees is used 3 or 4 other places in the legislation and not affected by the amendment, and the fact that the word fees is used in the title means that the amendment would not be effective, I think, to accomplish the very interesting purpose proposed by the sponsor.
Any further debate on amendment number 1? Representative Ewling.
Can we have a brief at ease for 1 second?
Would the House please stand at ease? The House, please come back to order. Do we have any further debate on amendment number 1? Representative Ewling.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to vote against this amendment. I think that giving the ability to the Department of Natural Resources to be able to negotiate their own contracts, I believe it's kind of their responsibility to go out and do that themselves, and I think that that's putting a burden on other people to do that. And I think it's an excellent idea just to let them be able to do it. It was my understanding that they were going to be able to use what they call Iron Rangers, which would be installed in various campsites throughout the state, where you would deposit money in, and it would be in safekeeping, and they wouldn't have to negotiate contracts for a private entity to come in and do their work. So I think it's their responsibility to collect those fees presently with the number of staff they have on the Department of Parks payroll.
Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall amendment number 1 be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? The clerk may tally the board.
10 yeas, 28 nays.
Amendment number 1 has failed adoption. Would the clerk please read the next amendment?
Amendment number 2 by Grunberg, page 1, line 12. Between the word may and establish, insert by regulation.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is, I hope, a friendly amendment. I think it's the intent of the bill to, obviously, there's the public interest involved, and this would permit...
Move the amendment, Representative.
I'm sorry. I move the amendment. This would permit the department to go through the regular regulatory process, getting public input and publishing, And I think that we checked with the legal department, and they weren't certain that the Department of Natural Resources now would go through the regulatory process. This is obviously a very important issue to a number of people who use our parks, and they should be notified as to what these fees will be and given an opportunity to participate in the hearing. I request the amendment.
Okay, the amendment has been moved. Are there objections?
Well, I guess...
Representative Gull.
Thank you. I just object for the purpose of a question to the finance chair through the speaker. What will be the fiscal impact of requiring that they promulgate regulations for this purpose?
Representative Adams.
Mr. Chair, the only fiscal impact that the cost would have to be absorbed by the present budget that we are presently putting together.
Are objections maintained on amendment number 2? Hearing no. Representative Gull.
No, I'll withdraw my objection, Mr. Speaker.
Are there any objections to amendment number 2? Hearing no objections, amendment number 2 has been adopted. Do we have any further amendments on the clerk's desk?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the Resources Committee substitute for House Bill 267 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Are there any objections to the advancement? Representative Taylor.
No objection to the advancement, sir. Mr. Speaker. If I could, just have it at ease, please.
Would the House please stand at ease? Will the House please come back to order? Do we have another amendment before us?
Yes, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Speaker, there's a motion before us. I'd like to withdraw my motion to advance the third reading.
Are there any objections to withdrawing the motion to advancement? Would the clerk please read the amendment?
Amendment number 3 by Taylor Ringstad and M.W. Miller. Page 1, line 20. Delete the period. Insert only after adequate protection is assured for Alaska's environment and the Alaskan lifestyle.
The chair is going to classify this as a frivolous and improper motion by Mason's Manual, page 280, section 401.
Mr. Speaker?
Representative Schultz.
Is that debatable on whether it's frivolous or not? In all honesty, I'm serious.
The chair has made a ruling. You can appeal the decision of the chair.
I would appeal the decision, and based on the fact that oftentimes the environmental community, in going in and trying to protect the environment, has oftentimes been accused of doing some of the very things that they accuse the developers of doing. And so I don't see this at all, and honestly, as a frivolous amendment.
The question that would come before this body after the chair has made a decision and has been appealed is whether or not the decision of the chair shall stand in judgment of the House. Representative Clarkson. Would the House please come back to order?
Mr.
Representative Taylor.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I reluctantly will concur in the ruling of the chair and withdraw the amendment. Thank you.
Are there any objections? Okay. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that committee substitute for House Bill 267 resources be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Are there any objections to the advancement from second to third reading? Would the clerk please read the bill for the third time?
Committee substitute for House Bill 267, Resources, by the Resources Committee, an act relating to the levy and collection of fees for the use of state park facilities and providing for an effective date.
Is there any debate? Representative Gull.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just a parliamentary inquiry, and I didn't make it before the advancement in order not to slow up the advancement. An amendment was made. The amendment was ruled out of order. The a member appealed the ruling. I don't believe any judgment was made on that. And then a member withdrew the amendment without asking unanimous consent. And I just would like you to confirm for me that that was all the way it should have been.
I asked if there were any objections to Representative Taylor withdrawing his amendment. There were no objections, so we now have proceeded. The majority leader has moved it to the third reading. The clerk has read it. We're now under debate.
Thank you, sir.
Representative Maru.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I speak in favor of the bill. People should pay for government. They should know what they're paying for. For example, public schools are on $6,000 a year. If they had to pay for it, of course they wouldn't, because they couldn't. People who want government services, it's fine and well, they should pay for it, whatever it costs. I speak in favor of the bill.
Are you ready for the question? Representative Navarre.
Mr. Speaker, I just question Representative from Homer and ask him if he's speaking in favor of taxes.
Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 267, Resources Amended, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
38 yeas, no nays.
Committee substitute for House Bill 267, Resources Amended, has passed the House. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call vote on final passage of Committee Substitute House Bill 267, Resources, be considered the roll call, amended, be considered the roll call on the effective date clause.
Are there any objections as to the effective date clause? Hearing no objection, the effective date clause has been adopted. Still under the daily calendar, we have some final actions on citations. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the citations on today's calendar be approved.
Are there any objections to the citations? Hearing no objection, so ordered. This brings us to unfinished business. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I've been collecting all the requests for excused absences for this coming weekend and received a number of notes from people concerned that I wasn't going to actually do it. And I'll try to do this as quickly as possible. Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that Representatives Pettyjohn, Gruenberg, Navarre, Pierce, and Binkley be excused following adjournment today through all day on Monday. That Representative Sund be excused from adjournment today until Sunday. That Representative Pierce be excused from adjournment today until plain time Monday. Representative Fuller, I believe, has been excused, but to make sure, I'll ask that he be excused until plain time on Monday. Representative Jenkins and Hanley until plain time on Monday. Representative Cotton to be excused on Monday. I think I got them all.
Are there any objections to those individuals that have been named to be excused from the call of the House?
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Groomer.
I just request until plain time on Monday.
It's been amended. Representative Maru.
Will we be in session tomorrow?
It is the intent that we'll be in session tomorrow at 10 o'clock. I would like to get a quorum call, and then at that point, the majority leader and the minority leader will sit in here with me and will simply read and refer bills. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, just to clarify, the Constitution requires that we not adjourn for 3 days in a row, so we do need a majority, a quorum, on the floor tomorrow to conduct business.
Do we have any further unfinished business? Representative Penny-Albury? Before you do that, are there any objections from those people that have been asked to be excused from the call of the House? Hearing no objections, so ordered. Would the House please come back to order? We are still under unfinished business. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that Representatives Cato and Pignolbury be excused upon adjournment tomorrow through plain time Monday, and that Representative Maru be excused upon adjournment tomorrow through all day Monday.
Are there any objections to the request? Representative Taylor.
I have no objection, just to ask to be added to the list through plain time on Monday.
You are giving the majority leader a migraine. Please remember when you're thinking about excuse from the call of the House that you try to notify the majority leader as soon as possible. I know in this case it's kind of unusual because we've been working pretty steady up to this point, but please keep that in mind. Are there any objections to Representative Taylor being added?
Chairman, Mr. Speaker, just one short Martin. In place at ease.
One short in place at ease. For those of you that are not in your place, would the House please come back to order? Any further unfinished business? I thought I did. And just in case I did not do it, those people that were added to the list to be excused from the call of the House, are there any objections? It's been granted. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I just want to clarify that we're now down to a very close margin for majority. Any member that's not excused now for tomorrow's session and isn't here, I plan on calling the House.
See, we get... Representative Pignolbury.
Mr. Speaker, I just wanted to give the majority leader some comfort. I'll be here tomorrow.
Yeah. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, in the limbo file, if you'll pull that out, this is the longevity bonus bill. Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous... I move and ask unanimous consent that the House recede from its amendments to committee substitute to Senate Bill 56 Finance, those amendments being House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 56 Finance, and ask the members to vote no.
Yes. Would the clerk please read the title of that bill?
House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 56 Finance by the Finance Committee, an act relating to a longevity bonus and providing for an effective date.
Okay. Is there any discussion? Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall the House recede from the amendments to Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 56 Finance?
Mr. Speaker.
Was the motion and the board is wrong. Okay. Representative Phillips?
This is going to be a crucial vote, and for some of the freshmen, I would appreciate if the majority leader would explain this motion, because it is the first major vote we're making.
Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I erred in asking for unanimous consent. The way the rulings are that the motion must be placed in the affirmative, that is, to recede, that's why I place a recommendation at the end. The effect of a no vote will be to reject the Senate version. That will get us to a conference committee on the longevity bonus, which was the plan all along.
Okay, now are you ready for the question? The question is, shall committee substitute for Senate Bill 56 Finance, should we rescind or recede from our amendments? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? The clerk may tally the board.
No yeas, 36 nays.
The House has turned down receding from the amendments to committee substitute for Senate Bill 56, Finance. Should the Senate not rescind from their action on adopting House committee substitute for committee substitute for Senate Bill 56, Finance, the following members will be appointed to the conference: Representative Clarkson, Representative Porchot, and Representative Ewling. Do we have any further unfinished business? This brings us to announcements of standing committees and special committees. Representative Hurley.
On the calendar today for state affairs, there was a bill, House Bill 301, Truth in Political Campaign Advertising, at the request of the prime sponsor. It will not be held today. He wants to gather some more information.
Any further committee announcements? Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In addition to what's on the calendar, House Bill 130, Collective Bargaining, has been rescheduled in the Hess Committee for Monday, April 8th.
Representative Adams.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Today in House Finance, we'll be closing out the following budgets: Health and Social Services, Revenue, University, and Public Safety. And also, Mr. Speaker, House Bill number 71, making a special appropriation to the Alaska Permanent Fund, which is scheduled to be heard tomorrow, will not be heard, but next Wednesday on April 10th. Thank you.
Representative Navarre, you're seeking the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Due to the length of our session today, the House Labor and Commerce Committee meeting will be at 1:30.
Representative Porchot.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just want to announce the Finance Subcommittee will be having a working meeting on HB 219, the Four Dam Pool, 3 p.m. today, House Resources, Room 118.
Any further announcements? Standing committees, special committees, general announcements. This brings us to special orders. Do we have any special orders today? Seeing no special order requests.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the House adjourn until 10 a.m. tomorrow.
Any objections? So ordered.